Enjoyed a wonderful lesson this morning from Josh and learned some things that were good for us all to understand and to put into practice in our lives. And I want to build on that a little bit, but in a different direction. As we think about the church, he talked about us as individual Christians and the ways that we can be like Jesus. As we think about the church, I want us to think a little bit, not just tonight, but probably some coming weeks as well, about church growth. And we want to make some comparisons between the church and its growth in the first century and the church and its growth in our century. And we want to look at some things, how they did it, what they did it with, and what works and what doesn't work, and what we expect. And tonight we want to start by making some comparisons about the things that we hear and think are needed for church growth today. And we want to compare that with what did they have in those areas in the first century. Now, as we go through these, we're kind of looking at really some things where we have advantages in some ways over what they had. Later on, we'll look at some things where we see what they had in another lesson, not tonight, but another lesson we'll look at some things they had that we don't seem to have or that we may be lacking in that would help us to be more like they were in the first century. Of course, when we read about the church in the first century, we read about a church that was just growing by leaps and bounds. It was 3,000 on the day of Pentecost right off the bat. And then a little later on, you read about the number of the disciples was 5,000. And then you read the number of the disciples grew. And then you read that it multiplied. And you say, wow, how many were there? And so much so that in a short period of time, some historians have estimated that up to 10% of the Roman Empire had become Christians. Now, that didn't all happen just right there in the first century, but that by the time the second or third century there had rolled around, that it had been 10% of the Roman Empire had become followers of Jesus Christ. Now, when you compare that then with what we see today, in the United States especially, now the United States is, well, it is what it is. It's where we live. We see other things in other places. Certainly in Europe we see churches almost dead. In other places, though, in Russia, in Africa, in India, we see churches growing, maybe not by 3,000 a day, but still growing tremendously. And we want to just kind of look at where we are and what we're doing and what they did in the first century and how does it line up. Of course, we understand that there are certain cultural things that are going to influence how well the church grows. We think about the fact that Paul, as he was on his missionary journeys, there was a certain area he wanted to go into, but the Holy Spirit stopped him and said, don't go there. You can't go in there. And for whatever reason, we assume that it was because the time just wasn't right, that the harvest wasn't ripe in that area. And we see that, 50 years ago, the idea of sending a missionary into Russia would have been ridiculous. No missionary would have gone into Russia 50 years ago. There was no hope of a harvest then. But after the Berlin Wall fell and after the Soviet Union split up and after some freedom started over in that area, then Ukraine and Russia and Belarus and all of those other former Soviet nations became ripe for a harvest, and a lot of Christians are now living in those areas where 50 years ago people thought, well, there will never be a church there. So we understand that political climate changes, the geography and the culture of places changes from time to time. And so some of those things are, I guess we could say, beyond our control. But we have to learn what we can do with where we are and what we have. But let's think about, first of all, and we're not going to, I have several of these. We'll look at a few each week for, on several different weeks, because I want us to take the time to really look at several of these things. The first one that I want us to think about is, what we think of, or what people today think of, as necessary for church growth is, well, you've got to have an excellent public speaker who really presents a nice presentation. And of course, a big part of that is, you know, we've got to have PowerPoint, and we've got to have all of these, you know, we've got to have, he's got to be dressed to the nines, and he's got to be sharp, and he's got to look good, and all these things. Now, what did they have in the first century? Did they have great public speakers? Now, there's not a doubt in my mind that Jesus was a great public speaker. But we're not talking about Jesus. We're talking about the church after he had gone back to heaven. What did they have? Well, they had people like Paul, about whom in 2 Corinthians 10:10 it said, well, his letters are really powerful, but boy, his bodily presence, he's kind of wimpy. And his speech, ugh, it's contemptible. It's deplorable. He can't talk good. And yet, Paul was one of the leading, certainly we still study the letters that he wrote to the churches today, but I wonder if Paul was going to preach somewhere, how many people would say, wow, yeah, we're looking forward to that meeting with Paul because he's a great speaker. Now, that doesn't seem to be the message that we got there. We see that they weren't people who had doctorate degrees or master's degrees or even other, and Paul was of the most educated of the early Christian teachers and preachers. But of the others, notice in Acts 4:13, it says, now when they saw the boldness, now that's a key, boldness is a key. But they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and they perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men. Now, I don't want to look down on a college degree by any means. I've got one. And education is a wonderful thing. And if we can have education and learn, that's a good thing. But if we think that that is going to be the thing that makes the church grow, that's not what they had in the first century when it was growing. We don't have to have that. Now, can it be helpful? It can be a benefit. And that's where I said we're looking at some things tonight that are things where we actually have what should be advantages over them, because we have people who have been trained in public speaking, who've been trained in presenting their arguments and presenting the information, and we have all of these special things like PowerPoint that I'm not even using tonight, but we have those things that are available to us that are tools that we can use that they didn't have back then. And yet they were growing better than we are today. But they saw. Peter and John were unlearned and ignorant men. But notice what they did notice. They took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. Now, obviously none of us can be with Jesus the way that Peter and John were. None of us can walk with Him and talk with Him and see His miracles and those things. But the more time we spend with Jesus through the Word, the more we're going to be like Peter and John. And the more we can have that boldness, and the more people will recognize, there's somebody that's been with Jesus. There's somebody that's like Jesus. And that's going to be a big key. But we need to think about, what are we expecting? What are we looking for? Now, I'm not just saying these things because I'm not a great public speaker and because I don't present an attractiveness up here. I was talking to somebody about our new tree. Somebody that, I don't remember now who it was this morning, that's been here before, and they said, oh, y'all got some new trees there. And I said, yeah. They said, oh, it probably makes you look better. I said, it'd make me look better if they said it right here in front of the pulpit. That would really help. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, we are looking for a physical solution when we really need to be digging in and wanting to be closer to Jesus and be more like Him. And do you remember, we talk about Jesus, like I said, I think He was an excellent public speaker, no doubt. The way that He was able to captivate people, and He spoke with authority, and they were shocked by His ability to teach. And even when He went back to His hometown, they were stunned. They said, you know, where'd He learn all this stuff? I mean, isn't He the son of the carpenter over here? Where'd He get all this? But Isaiah does say of him that there was nothing about his appearance that would draw us to him. Jesus was not well liked or popular or whatever because he was the most handsome GQ guy around. He wasn't that person. And so when we think that's what we need, we're missing the point. It's okay. I mean, if we've got somebody that can do a good job speaking, if we've got somebody who looks attractive, that's okay. That's great. That's fine. But that's not the answer. The second thing, let's think about this one. We've got to have a nice church building and it's got to be in the right location. You know, that's the rule for real estate. Location, location, location. The three rules, right? And we know about that here in Blue Ridge, and we know how much location costs up here too. You know, it's some expensive property. There's a little shack down here for sale for $325,000. Looks like a run down, about to fall over, but they want $325,000 for it. You know, so you know, we understand it. It's having a piece of property in the right location. Oh, that's the thing. And I have known of churches that moved location thinking, oh, if we can just move to this place, then we'll grow. If we can just build X building, you know, if we can just build this building, then we'll grow. And they've done that and it didn't work. Now, if a church is growing and they build a place and they grow into that, that's fine. That's not a problem to have a nice building or to have a good location. But what did they have in the first century? Well, they didn't have a lot of nice church buildings. They didn't have any. They met in people's homes. They met in rented rooms of the temple or of a synagogue, or they met in a borrowed room, and eventually, with the persecution, eventually they were meeting in hiding, in secret. They didn't put a building up with a sign saying, "Here we are." We've been very fortunate in this country over, you know, the whole course of the Restoration Movement in America that, yeah, there's been some people that were upset at the church for one reason or another, but we don't understand what persecution's even like. We can't even imagine a time or a situation where we wouldn't be able to put the sign there that says, "Hey, here we are, come find us." But I wonder sometimes if that has been a detriment to us, because what we have come to do is, instead of following the teaching of the Great Commission that Jesus gave, we've followed the teaching of the Field of Dreams. Remember that movie? If you build it, they will come. And that's been kind of our philosophy. Well, if we just build a big building and it's a nice building, nice facility, and we put a nice sign out front, they'll come. And there are an awful lot of nice buildings that nobody's meeting in. That nobody's there. Because that's not the way Christianity works. Not New Testament Christianity, not the Christianity that Jesus taught. He said, "Go into all the world and make disciples. Not build a building and wait for them to come to you." And that's what he did. And that's one of the things that Josh talked about a lot this morning in his lesson, was if we're going to be like Christ, we're going to have to be available to people. We're going to have to help people. We've got to get out there with those people and bring them to Christ. And I can remember on one occasion someone, not here, but someone once said, told me, you know, I said something about us needing to let people know who we are as the church. Well, they know we got the truth and they know where we're at. And they can come here if they want the truth. Really? Do they? I went down to the local grocery store that was just down the highway. And they had a good location. I mean, it was right on the main highway of town. Better location than we've got here. I mean, here you kind of can't see us for the trees on this side and the hill. About all you can see is the tip of the steeple up there. But, you know, they were right on the main highway. One highway in town. And they were right there on it. And I went down to the grocery store and I talked to several people at the grocery store and told them who I was, where. And I said, you know, from the Church of Christ. And they said, "Now, which church is that?" So I said, "It's the Church of Christ." And they said, "Well, where's that at?" And so I'd tell them, and they'd say, "There's a church there?" Now, first of all, they didn't know that we had the truth. They didn't know that the Church of Christ was any different than any other church in town. And probably a lot of them wouldn't have cared anyway. But they didn't know that. How would they? People aren't just going to know these things. They had never been in the inside the building to even know that, well, y'all don't even have a piano. Had somebody once offered somebody that came, we had one church where I was at, we had a funeral, and somebody offered, you know, we could raise y'all some money to get you a piano if you need one. Try to explain to them, we don't want one, you know, but they just don't understand. They don't know the difference in what we believe and what we teach. And I think the last time Terry was here, I was talking with him and somebody else. We were talking about the fact that one of our mistakes that we make sometimes in the church is we want to try to blend in and be like everybody else instead of saying, here's why we're unique. Here's why we're different. Here's why we're worth checking out. You know, Burger King doesn't advertise by saying, hey, you know, we're kind of like McDonald's. That's what kind of advertisement is it? Hey, we're like the other churches out there. No. What's different about us? What's unique about it? Why should people be here instead of those other churches? What do we have that they don't have? Well, see, we think they've got nice buildings and then right location, just like we can. In fact, a lot of times they have nicer buildings in better location. And so a lot of times they have more money. And so they do those things. But those first century folks, they didn't have the church buildings. They went out to the people. They went, Acts 17 verses 1 through 3, they went to the synagogues. They went out and they just argued and reasoned with people from the Scriptures about Jesus Christ. And they met wherever they could get together to meet. Now eventually they did find places where they could get together, and a lot of times it was a wealthy member who donated something, and we have that same situation even today where a lot of times it's someone wealthy donated a lot of the money and the location of the land or whatever. But that isn't the key. And again, you know, if something happened, and God forbid it did happen, but if this building burned down to the ground, would the church cease to exist just because the building burned down? No. We'd meet somewhere else. We'd find another place. We'd find another way. But we can't put too much stock in church buildings. They weren't what helped the church grow in the first century when it was growing by leaps and bounds. And then sometimes we think, well, what we've really got to have is we've got to have really wise businessmen in charge. You know, we've got to have the leadership of the church has to be some businessmen that really, you know, they really know the ins and outs of how to make these things work. And I'm not opposed to someone coming from the business world to help lead the church as long as they understand the church isn't a business. It's not to be run like a business. It's a family. It's a body of Christ. It's not a business. But that's fine if you can bring the wisdom and knowledge that you gained there and bring that to the leadership of the church. That's fine. But is that what they had in the first century? Is that what was necessary? Look at who the apostles were that Jesus chose. Some of them we don't know what their occupation was. One of them was, for all intents and purposes, a terrorist. He was a zealot. He wanted to kill all the Romans. And Jesus picked him and said, hey, you, come follow me. One of them, on the other end of the spectrum, was a Roman sympathizer who was a tax collector for the Romans. I don't know how those two guys were in the same room together without killing each other. I mean, that says something about Jesus being the Prince of Peace, doesn't it? That he could take this guy that wanted to kill all the Romans and this guy that was collecting the taxes for the Romans and was considered a traitor by the guys who wanted to kill the Romans, and he brought them together. And they were working together, the zealot and the tax collector. That's amazing. But those were the closest to businessmen. Now, I guess unless you count a fisherman, I guess, you know, the several of the others, at least four that we know of, James and John and Peter and Andrew, were fishermen. We don't really know what the others did. But these young guys that he recruited to follow after him, they weren't wealthy. They weren't retired from, you know, years of being on top of a Fortune 500 company. These guys, look at Acts chapter 3 and verse 6. Somebody hits Peter up begging. And notice what Peter said. Silver and gold have I none. He wasn't a rich guy. Peter was one of the few. It even talks about him, about his house. Levi, Matthew, was the other. It talked about Jesus going to a dinner at Matthew's house, and then it talks about him going to Peter's house on one occasion. It doesn't even mention, I don't even know where those other guys lived. But they weren't rich guys. They didn't have a lot of money. They were just humble, common folks. And yet they were the ones that Jesus chose to be the ones that went out there and set the world upside down. Turned it over. They say upside down. What they were really trying to do was turn it right side up again. Because the devil had it upside down. But you think about what those guys did. They were teachable. And they were willing to go do whatever it took and do what Jesus said. And if we today would be like that, it wouldn't matter if we didn't have a high school diploma or if we had doctorate degrees or if we'd run a Fortune 500 company. If we do what Jesus said, we can help His church grow. The last one we want to look at tonight is we think about comfort and convenience an awful lot. A lot of you probably remember back in the days when there wasn't indoor plumbing and air conditioning and padded pews and all of these things that we think of now as being oh so important. I remember reading a couple weeks back in the Gospel Advocate from 1861 or 1881, somewhere back in there, and somebody had posted the little article, and they were just trying to get us to see the article. Well, over on the other side was a little column of news and notes, and I read that little column too, and in that little column, a fellow was talking about how he was going to preach somewhere in Arkansas, in the Ozarks, and he got to the river, and it was frozen, but it wasn't frozen solid enough for his horse to get across, so he had to leave his horse and cross the river himself, and then he had to hike 15 miles to get to where the church was where he was supposed to preach. And he preached that night, and then he preached the next day. It was Sunday, and he preached that Sunday, and he said, and there was a young lady that responded, wanted to be baptized. He said they had to go out and break 7 inches of ice off the river to get to the water to baptize her. And I know our last baptism, I was complaining because the water was about 75 degrees instead of 85 or whatever. You know, it was a little cool. I was somewhat facetiously complaining about it because, you know, but I know the Sharon was probably, she was, well, that's kind of cold. You know, but she's the one that went under. I didn't, you know, so. But, you know, sometimes we think about these and isn't it nice? It's nice to have comfort. It's nice to have convenience. Nice to have padded pews. And yet, even with the padded pews, y'all don't want me to preach for 2 hours. What's the point of padded pews if I can't preach for 2 hours? I don't understand. But, you know, you think about back in the olden days, you know, they either stand or sit on wooden stumps for a long time listening to these old restoration preachers and things back in those days, you know, and out in the heat with the mosquitoes and everything else, and we have all these advantages. I mean, we have so many benefits, and yet we kind of take them for granted. The cars, the air conditioning, you know, we can pull up my phone and I can pull up my Bible app and I can have 15 different translations and commentaries and everything else right there at my fingertips. And yet, they didn't have any of those things back then. They baptized people in the rivers. or in the pools, whatever water was available to them. Now, the Ethiopian, hey, there's some water over there. What's keeping me from being baptized? He didn't say, oh, now let's get on back to the church building. We've got a baptistry that's heated there. You know? He said, hey, let's do it. Let's go. Nothing's stopping you if you believe in Jesus. And you know, sometimes we can allow our comfort and convenience that should be something that's a benefit and it's a blessing to us. But unfortunately, benefits and blessings can sometimes turn into idols and excuses if we're not careful. That's one of the things that God warned the Israelites of when He was taking them into the land of Israel, when He's taking them to Canaan's land. And He said, look, you're going to live in houses that you didn't build. You're going to eat fruit from vineyards that you didn't plant. You're going to eat of trees that you didn't buy. You're going to have all these blessings. And He said, be careful. Because when you get all these blessings, if you don't remember Me, you're going to start to think, look what I've done for myself. And we've got to watch out for that. That attitude of, oh, well, look where we are. Look how good we've got it. Look what we've done. Look what we accomplished. We've got to watch out. Because comfort and convenience are not what Jesus called us to. Now, I know Jesus did say, come unto Me if you're heavy laden, and if you're labored, and I'll give you rest for your souls. But you know what else He said? Take up your cross and follow Me. That doesn't sound like comfort and convenience, does it? Sometimes we get so used to being comfortable that we don't want to experience the discomfort that would come from talking to somebody about Jesus or even inviting them to church and maybe them rejecting us. Oh, I can't believe they rejected. It's such a slight inconvenience. And yet, it's so, so rough, so bad. We need to think about where we're putting our priorities. So, is it good to have good public speakers and nice buildings and businessmen that can lead and have some comforts and convenience? It can be. It can be a benefit. It can be beneficial to us and help the church. But if we put our dependence on those things instead of depending on Christ and going back to the Bible and to the Scriptures, then it'll become a hindrance to the gospel instead of a benefit. So we've got to be sure that we don't allow the tools and blessings that God has given us to become things that the devil turns against us and uses as weapons that keep us from doing what we should. Now, we've got several others that we're going to look at in future weeks, but I just want us to think about these things tonight and think about what are we putting our faith and trust in. I'm glad that to be here and to come and work with the church and to try to help the church, but if I was hired thinking that I'm going to fix everything or that I'm going to somehow, you know, I'm not a miracle worker. I'll do everything I can to work with the church and help the church in every way I can. But I'm not Jesus. I can't do what any other good preacher couldn't have done. There's no miracle pill that I have that's going to make things all better. So if we depend on, you know, we got this nice facility, and we've got a good building. It's nice, comfortable in the winter and in the summer. Isn't that nice? Yeah, it's nice. But if that's all we depend on, if that's what we're putting our faith and trust in, we've missed the boat. We've misunderstood what Christianity is all about. If you're here tonight, if you put your faith and trust in yourself or in someone else or in something else other than Jesus Christ, it's in the wrong place. And whether you've never become a Christian or whether you became a Christian but you've allowed yourself to get drawn away to believing in something else being the key to success as a Christian. One of the New Testament church, those first century Christians, it was Jesus, 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 and His teachings, and His teachings, and His teachings. And we need to focus on those things. Now, that's not to say that there's nothing else involved, but that's got to be the foundation. Jesus and what He taught has to be our foundation. If you're here and you have a need to respond to God's invitation for any reason, please come as we stand and as we sing.